Welcome to This Is Money. I'm Georgie Frost.
And I'm Simon Lambert.
And coming up, why so many of us haven't made a will and why we really need to get our skates on. Before you do, though, get to the inevitable. Do you have any idea how much you need to save for a comfortable old age? If not, you are not alone. So how much should you be saving into a pension? We also look at how to Brexit-proof your pension savings. And one for the parents, if you need to move to a better school catchment area, how you can get a bigger mortgage without overstretching yourself. And don't forget, you stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. But right, first, Simon, you can sit there all smug for this one because regular listeners to the podcast will know that you have sorted out your will. Yes, he has. But it was, I believe, only this year, or was it last year, Simon?
No, I think it was definitely last year.
Okay,
indication of how long we've been doing this podcast, it might have even been the year before. Right at the tail end of the year before.
Either way,
maybe
Simon.
It crossed over from the tail end to the start of the next year.
Well, I think we should go in the middle. Let's say last year. Either way, Simon, the editor of the finest finance website out there, took until his 30-somethingth year, with two young kids already in tow to sort it out, whether it was this year, last year, 2 years ago, whatever. However, Simon is still in the minority, millions of families risking their loved ones losing their inheritance due to mistaken beliefs about wills and just not getting it done. The advice is always to get it done, but to get it done quickly. So Simon, our illustrative example here, what took you so long, especially with the kids element to it? Because it's not all about money, is it? This is a provision for them afterwards. So what was the issue? Why do you think 27 million, do they say, reckon people haven't got their will done?
Inertia.
Okay.
And thinking that it's too complicated and it will take too much time and that it will cost a load of money. Firstly, there's the actually getting around to it bit. If you don't do it when you have a life event, i.e. having the kids, moving home, something like that, you put it on the back burner. You can then add in the, I'm going to have to take time out of work. I'm going to have to go see a solicitor. I'm going to have to do this. It's going to take me loads of time. And then it's going to cost me, you know, 500 quid, mm-hmm. something like that. So all of those things added together, I think, means that lots of people don't do it. But it is a very important thing to do. And firstly, inertia, the only person who can overcome that is you. But it is very important, because intestacy rules do mean that who you think gets it probably won't get it. Surviving spouses get at least the first 250,000, which can cut children out of the estate altogether. If you have an estate that would fall into inheritance tax liability, then it's important to do it in order to minimise that. And also, if you have kids, you need a will, because you need to say, you know, yeah, who you want to look after them. Now, it doesn't mean that person has to look after them, but it's to give the indication of it. So there's lots of important stuff around it, and it actually doesn't take that long. I did mine with a solicitor. We met with her. We spent less than an hour with her. She explained all the stuff we needed to know. She wrote us a will that we could understand. We had a couple of questions. We went backwards and forwards over email, and eventually we had a will sorted. If you've got a relatively simple situation, there are companies that will do it online for you. There is one company called Fairwill, which I've mentioned them only because they're the only one whose system I've tested out and been through, and it's very easy. It's not going to be suitable for you if you are the kind of person who has an inheritance tax liability or something like that, or a particularly complex scenario. But lots of people don't have a complex scenario or an inheritance tax liability. So it is really one of those things that you just need to get done.
We'll move on from that, because before we get to the inevitable, hopefully it will be a long and happy life and you won't have to worry about your kids' provision and all that sort of thing. But we do need to think about the lead up to that, having a nice, comfortable, happy retirement. But to do that, you need a nice, happy, comfortable pension pot. So how much do we, and this is that question that keeps coming back, how much do we need to put aside for that, you know, each month, practically speaking? And how optimistic are we that we are saving enough, that we will have enough to get there? So, Simon, how much is going to be enough? I mean, how can you tell in, say, 30 years, you know, prices are going to be and da-da-da? It's so difficult.
Well, the problem is, as you said there, it's very much a how long is a piece of string kind of question. What is not enough is the amount that people are perhaps being lulled into something of a false sense of security into thinking is enough. Mm. And that is the minimum total auto-enrollment contribution. So we have an auto-enrollment contribution system at the moment where workers are automatically enrolled into a pension and they have to opt out. And this has been a huge success because it means that there are millions of people who otherwise wouldn't have been saving into a pension who are now saving into a pension because it's a bit of nudge theory. If you get people to opt out rather than to opt in, you find many more people do it because people never get around to opting out. The total contribution for that has now gone up to 8%. So you've got workers included in that, employers included in that, and the tax relief that workers get on it. So the principle behind pension saving is that you save into a pension out of your untaxed income. The way that works is the money you pay in gets topped up to replace what's been taken in basic rate tax. So basic rate tax is 20%. Your pension contributions get topped up by 25%. Mm-hmm. The mathematics behind that is that if you were paid £100 and you had to pay £20 of that in tax, you'd then have £80 left. To get you back from 80 to 100, you have to boost it by 25%. Yeah. This is something that confuses people sometimes, but once you explain it like that, it's fine. But 8% is not enough in total. The argument is that it should be at least 12% and probably more like 15%.
Do you ever see the government going that far and pushing it further than the 8%, or is that argument about people being turned off? Because we have seen it go up gradually.
Yeah, there's this worry that if they put it too high, then people are going to start noticing that amount coming out of their paychecks. I think they will continue to try to push it up. I don't imagine we'd manage to get to that 15%. Mm. And the 15% is somewhere where it suddenly becomes clear quite how important employer contributions can be. Because if your employer is matching your contribution, then that's great, but they might only match it up to a certain level. So if they'll only match it up to 5%, then you put in 5, they put in 5, you get an extra 1.25% from the tax relief, but you're only on 11.25. Mm. But if they'll match it all the way up to 7%, for example, then you just put in 7, they put in 7, and the tax relief will take you nicely over the 15%. And there's not a huge difference in saying we'll match your pension up to 5 and we'll match your pension up to 7 until you suddenly do that maths and work out how much harder it's going to be. Because if you're in the we'll only match it up to 5 camp, you're actually going to have to end up paying a 9% of yours, which is quite a lot. Now, if you're lucky and your employer will double what you put in, then it gets much easier to get to 15% because you could just put in 5 and they put in 10. And you alluded to it, so much of how much is a piece of string thing. It depends on how old you are, because the younger you start, the less you need to put in. The later you start, the more you need to put in proportionally of your salary to get to a decent amount. It depends on what your employer will contribute and also how much you expect your lifestyle to change in retirement. So this is where higher earners can have quite a big advantage, because you could be a high earner spending lots of money on your kids and your mortgage, etc., during your working years. And then once you've got the mortgage paid off and the kids are out of home, then you could suddenly find your expenses drop quite substantially. Mm. People do tend to continue living to the lifestyle they're accustomed to. But if you're taking a big mortgage payment and quite a bit of spending on the kids out of the equation, then all of a sudden it could drop. Whereas if you're on a lower level of income and you're not spending that much on your mortgage and you don't have kids, for example, then you're not going to see the same big drop in your expenses.
Any little tips, Simon?
Just do it now. Start early.
Yeah.
And if you don't think you're paying enough in, pay a little bit more in. And the sooner you do it, the better it is. The power of compounding and investment gains on investment gains on investment gains over the years is the key to getting a decent retirement fund.
And you can tie yourself in knots with 15%, 20%, 10%. You know, 1% is better than 0%.
Yeah, and actually, so say you're putting in 5% and you realise that actually you need to be putting in 10%, but you think there's no way I can afford 5% of my earnings. Well, don't do it all in one whack. Add an extra 1% every so often. So even if you did an extra 1% every 3 months, then that would get you there gradually. Maybe you want to space it out more than that, but work out a plan and say, right, well, within 2 years, I'm going to be doing the 10%. And you'll feel the pain of that so much less than you will suddenly finding that you've got 5% less money in your paycheck.
All right, well, we're sticking with pensions, and it's becoming increasingly complex and stressful over recent years to make sure, you know, with the freedoms and annuity rates and the like, to make sure you pick the right way to finance your retirement. Annuity rates, as I mentioned, have been dropping like a stone, and due to Brexit worries, concerns about trade wars, global economic slowdown, they've apparently fallen to a 25-year low. And for those on the cusp of retiring in 2019, one expert has called the situation a horror story. So once purchased, of course, annuity contracts cannot be undone. So just a quick reminder, Simon, what's an annuity?
Annuity is a financial product that provides you with an income, usually for the rest of your life. So you buy an annuity and you hand over your money to a financial company, you typically an insurance company, and then they will guarantee to pay you a certain amount every year for the rest of your life. And that may be linked to inflation, which is good because it goes up with inflation. It may pay out to a surviving spouse if you die, or it may not do any of those things. And the more perks you add to it, such as inflation linking, paying out to a spouse, the less you'll get in return for the lump sum you're handing over, because obviously those guarantees cost money. But the problem was in the annuity market was more and more people had to take them, as you had more and more people with defined contribution pensions. Due to the crash in interest rates, in government gilt yields, which is what really influences annuity pricing, people were getting much less for their money. They were very opaque products, so it was very difficult to see whether you were getting good value. People weren't shopping around, so your pension provider, most people just bought an annuity from their pension provider, but your pension provider might not have offered very good rates, whereas pension provider X over there might have offered much better ones. And there was also this big concern that people have of, well, it's an unfair system, because what if I die early and I've spent £100,000 on an annuity, and then the money's gone and my family don't get that money, they don't, or they might not get the payout, or they'll get a lower payout, a 50% spouse's payout. But then the flip side of that is if you live to, you know, 103, then your quid's in. So it was a bit of a lottery. And obviously the people who die early are subsidising the rates for everybody else. But that's a bit of an awkward thing to consider, isn't it?
Well, it's got even worse. As we said, Simon, they've fallen to a 25-year low. So you have to ask the question, is it still a wise and popular choice for some people to do this? And why is it particularly bad? Why have you got one expert calling the situation for those on the cusp of retiring now a horror story? That's strong language.
Well, you've got this scenario where obviously interest rates were slashed after the financial crisis. You had quantitative easing, which involved buying up government bonds to inject money into the financial system. That sent annuity rates plummeting even further. And this era of cheap money and monetary easing has been really bad for annuity rates, because it's pushed them down. There's the same reason why it's been bad for savings rates and so on. Interest rates have then gone up a little bit, but not very much in this country. We're only at barely above what we got to at the right at the worst bit of the financial crisis. And we ended up cutting them before we raised them due to the Brexit vote. They've gone up more in America, but now they're starting to come down in America. The European Central Bank cut interest rates last week, restarted its quantitative easing process. So now the thoughts are that interest rates are going to start heading down again. We've got this trade war that Donald Trump's involved in. We've got problems in Iran. We've got Brexit closer to home. We've got all of these things that are weighing down on the market and pushing rates down. And that is really bad news for people who are retiring and want to buy an annuity. Now, many less people do that because they now have pension freedom, the option to keep their money invested and draw on it. But then when you ask most people what they want from their pension savings is, they say, I just want to be given a secure income for the rest of my life. And the thing that gets you a secure income for the rest of your life is an annuity.
Do you expect the situation to get worse? Do you expect annuities to still be around even?
I think I can't see it getting better, to be honest. Yeah. I don't see, well, maybe, but I don't see there being an uplift in interest rate expectations. It will eventually get better, because I think what's going to happen is we'll see interest rate cuts, the next recession, which will inevitably arrive. And then by the time we get through that, we might then be in a position where you start to see a more normal path for interest rates, and interest rates start to go up sooner after the recovery starts. We're a long way from getting back to 5% interest rates.
What's the advice to protect your pension, to have a comfortable pension if you are in this situation?
Do shop around. for an annuity if you want one. Do consider all your options. Do speak to a financial advisor and do think about the fact that, yes, you might have to pay them a lump sum, and that lump sum might feel like quite a lot of money as a chunk out of your pension, but that the lifetime value you will get for that advice will probably greatly outweigh its cost and certainly can prevent you from making a bad decision.
All right, well, finally, let's do one for the parents, shall we? A lot of talk about catchment areas. If this is relevant to you, then you'll totally understand this next email from one of your readers. We are thinking, says the reader, of moving to make sure that we live within the catchment area of a great secondary school, but realise lots of other parents are probably having the same idea, and that makes it, of course, very expensive. We know that moving will inevitably mean we will have to take out a bigger mortgage. How do we make this happen? What are the risks? And how do we make sure we aren't overstretching ourselves? You don't really have to be moving to a catchment area at all. It's just, this is a general question, isn't it? About risks and making sure you're not overstretching yourself.
True that, but houses near good schools cost a lot more money, and the catchment area thing is a major issue for families. Successive governments have really failed on this one. It's a real problem for villages in certain parts of the country, where people with kids of a certain age just do not feel comfortable moving to the villages rather than the towns, because they're so worried about their kids getting into the schools. And so it rips the heart out of the villages, because it removes a huge chunk of families who would in the past have been living there. And it seems that these catchment areas for good secondary schools just get tighter and tighter. I mean, I know that in the town that I grew up in Harpenden, which has 3 secondary schools, there are kids who actually live in the town who don't get into one of the schools there, which is absolutely insane. So you can understand why people worry about it so much. And moving into a home, the same size home within that catchment area of that good school, you could be looking at £100,000. You could be looking at £200,000. It's a lot of extra money on your mortgage. I mean, it's still probably going to be cheaper than private school fees. And the great advantage of buying a home to be near a good school is that you can eventually sell that home for more money. And you can't sell your kids for more money if you send them to private school. Damon. I'll just leave that one there. I'm not even going to continue down that line. But if you do want to do this, there are some ways and means of doing it to not overstretch. So you could potentially look at things that would allow you to pass the affordability tests if you're going to struggle to pass the affordability tests. But you have to bear in mind that over the long term, these are going to cost you more money. Mm-hmm. So you could extend your mortgage term. It used to be that 25 years was the norm. That shifted up to 30. There's lots of people now taking out 40-year mortgages. Often this is done to help first-time buyers, but mortgage lenders will also do it to help people who are further up the ladder. That will have the advantage of bringing down your monthly payments, but you also need to bear in mind that you will end up paying considerably more interest over the years. So if you can, and if you do that, and you can do so, chip away at the mortgage, overpay it, that kind of thing. Secondly, fixing versus tracking your rates. Now, most people take out fixed rates, but do you fix for 2? Do you fix for 5? If you're borrowing more money and you're a little bit worried about the security of it, you're probably better off going for a 5-year fix, because let's face it, you're probably not going to move home within 2 years. Most people don't. And if you're moving to be close to a school, that probably greatly reduces the chance of you moving within 5 years. And then also tidying up your credit history, looking at all the things that are going to help you pass the mortgage lender's checks to make sure that you get that mortgage. And secondly, also, if you are thinking about moving home in order to try to get into a school to apply this year, you might be very wise to take a look at the admissions criteria of your local education authority and the school in order to find out whether there are any things in there that might mean that you have left it too late.
All right.
Because you might have borrowed all that money and moved and then discovered that you don't get in. And don't try that thing where you try to move to an area and then move straight back out of it. The schools are so wise to that one nowadays. You might suddenly find that your kid turns up at school and is told that they no longer have a place.
Wow. What a headache all of this is. If you have any experiences, do let us know. If you've got anything that you would like us, or got an email you'd like to send to us that we can look into. Simon?
Email us at editor@thisismoney.co.uk. Tweet us @thisismoney, or come to this thisismoney.co.uk/podcast, where you can find the articles of all the podcasts past and join in the debate and read the comments.
And remember, you can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. And if you do like our podcast, why not rate us on iTunes? It helps people find us.